We are in Deuteronomy, the sixth lesson. And in our last lesson, Moses instructed the nation of Israel to tell their children for all generations to come that when their parents were faithful to the Lord and trusted in the Lord and trusted in His commands completely, the Lord would be their caretaker for good and for survival. For trusting Him is righteousness, and righteousness is founded in trusting His commands. Well, here in chapter 7 of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses moves on to give the nation of Israel some specific warnings about how to interact with the tribes that they are going to encounter when they cross just over the Jordan River to the west side. And there, when they get there, there are specific things the Lord wants done. The Lord instructed Israel to destroy these seven specific nations of people as it moved through the process of taking the promised land. And if you remember, just as Israel took the land on the east side of the Jordan River away from the Amorites and it became the first part of the promised land, that was over there with King Sihon and King Og, who were the rulers, the kings. And if you remember, they were massive Amorite tribes on that side, on the east side of the Jordan River. And if you remember, not one king, not one man, not one woman, not one boy, not one girl was left alive after the conflict with Israel. And so Israel took all their fortified cities and all their villages and all their lands and all the cattle, but no humans were left alive on that side of the Jordan River. So too, the Lord wants these seven tribes that are on the west side of the Jordan River to also be totally destroyed when they go in to take the promised land. Let's see that in chapter 7, verse 1. When the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them before you, and you defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. Who were these seven nations? Well, let me go to the board and show you. The seven nations were the Amorites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites. Now, I want you to also know on this board as I'm showing you this, the Canaanites control land next to the Jordan River and next to the Mediterranean Sea. The Hittites control the land here, and they also control the land here. The Hivites have the land in the middle, and they also control the land up at the top. Now, these seven nations were all descendants of the Canaanites. These seven nations were all descendants of the Canaanites. First of all, that is listed here is the Hittites. Now, the Hittites were a nation that were descendants from the children of Heth. Who was Heth? Let's go back to the board. I think a chart will actually help us there. Noah, if you remember Noah and the ark, Noah had a son by the name of Ham. Ham actually rode on the ark. Ham had a son by the name of Canaan. That's the Canaan we're talking about. Canaan had a son by the name of Sidon. Sidon had a son by the name of Heth. And from Heth, many of the major tribal nations that are living in this Canaan land, land that Canaan had established, many of his descendants, or several of his descendants, I should say, actually grew and formed their own areas in their own land, own tribal areas in the land. So, Heth was Noah's great-great-grandson. Now, just to bring you up on a story about the Hittites, About 500 years before this story is found in the book of Deuteronomy, Abraham's sweet dear wife by the name of Sarah had died. And Abraham went and he purchased a field and he purchased a cave near the village of Hebron. Near the village. And he purchased it from Ephron the Hittite. In fact, if you look on any maps today, if you go to Israel, you can visit the Cave of the Patriarchs, which is just south of Hebron, where Abraham bought that cave. Abraham is buried there, Sarah's buried there, Isaac's there, Rebekah's there, Jacob's there. It was the burial cave for Abraham's family. Now, as I told you just a minute ago, the Hittites controlled not only this area, but also this area up here, two different areas. So from Heth, several of these major tribal nations were born. The second nation that was mentioned were the Girgashites, and they were also a nation that descended from Heth. Now that mass of land that it controlled was just west of the Sea of Galilee, right there, kind of in a teardrop shape. Next came the Amorites. The Amorites were a nation also descended from the children of Heth. Its land was directly west of the Dead Sea, directly west of the Dead Sea, right there. It also controlled a major portion of this land over here, which has already been taken on the west, on the east side of the Jordan River for the nation of Israel. It already belongs. When they are in this these plains of Moab, that land on this side is already theirs. It's part of the promised land. Reuben's going to take some of that land. Gad's going to take some of that land. And half the tribe of Manasseh has taken some of that land for them to live on. Then we have the Canaanites. The Canaanites were a nation descended from Ham, just as I told you here. Noah, Ham, Canaan. Canaan was the first to actually inhabit this land with his little small family. We have to be careful when we're talking about and using the name the Canaanites. It is used in two different ways or two different senses in the Old Testament. First, the whole land that we know as Israel was called Canaan land first in the Bible. Let me tell you that story so you can catch up why. After the Tower of Babel happened, when the people were scattered throughout the world according to their different languages, Ham's family had gained a new language different from, Canaan's family had gained a new language different from Ham's. And so Canaan took the land that would one day be called the Promised Land when he moved out. Tower of Babel is way over here. I can't even put it on the map. He came to this land with his small family, with a new language, and they landed there and they settled there. And as you will see in the descriptions of these seven nations, they were all descendants of Canaan who moved his family into the land after the Tower of Babel. Now, of course, Canaan had a grandson named Heth. And these tribal nations, as you're going to hear, are descendants of Heth through Sidon, through Canaan. So that's how that works. So in the second sense, when we're talking about Canaanites, Canaan was that original family that moved into the area. And all the nations were formed by descendants of this original Canaanite nation. This, we have it here, we have them here, we have them here by the Mediterranean Sea and over by the Jordan River. But in the beginning, it was all Canaanite land. And so as children were born, really children of Sidon and then children of Heth, Heth's children and grandchildren began, and great-grandchildren, descendants began to form strong tribes and took some of their father's Canaanite land for their own, and it was named after them. Then we have the Perizzites. The Perizzites were a nation that were descended from Canaan. Now, we don't know exactly whether they were descendants of Heth or not. But what we do know is their land was just west of the Hivite land, and in between the Canaanites and the Hivites, in between the Canaanite and the Hivites. We know where their land was. Now the Hivites, as you have seen, the Hivites means cave dwellers. And they're in this mountain range that are here. They're also in the mountain range up here. These were a descendant of Heth, and they controlled both of those areas. Now, then we come to the Jebusites. The Jebusites were also a nation descended from Heth. But the Jebusites were really and truly a descendant of the Amorites and the Hittites. The Amorites and the Hittites. I need to tell you that story. Because the Amorites and the Hittites were a descendant of Heth, and Heth was a descendant of Canaan, so they're all related, but really the Jebusite group is a different group. Over in Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 3, we find out that there was a man that was born, a boy that was born by and named Jebu. And Jebu's father was a Amorite, and his mother was a Hittite. And as Jebu grew and he got married and he had children, their clan began and tribe began to grow. And finally, Jebu moved just north of the Hittite and the Amorite land up into the Canaanite land that's left. And he established a village right about there. And he called it Jebu. It was named Jebu. When the Israelites moved into the Promised Land, they were supposed to conquer that Jebu city. But they couldn't. Because the Jebu and his Jebusite descendants fortified that city so well that it was called the Citadel of Jebusites. The Citadel of the Jebusites. And in fact, all for the time of Joshua and the judges, and through the days of King Saul, Jebu's descendants controlled the citadel of the Jebusites, the Jebusites' citadel. It would not be until the 7.5 year of King David's reign that he would go to the Jebusite citadel and would get in and conquer the people. And he would take that city of Jebu for himself, and he would rename it Jerusalem. That's the history that we find about Jerusalem in the book of Ezekiel. Jebu was a, and the Jebusites were descendants of Heth through parents who were both Amorite and Hittite. Well, the Lord told these Israelites there in the plains of Moab, right there, that's where they're sitting, when Moses is telling them these instructions. The Lord was specific about these seven nations. No covenant was to be made with them, not one. No favor was to be shown to them, verse 2b. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them. The word covenant means a sacred, a kinship bond between two parties. None of that was to be done. Favor means goodwill or kind regards. None of that was to be gone, was to be done. The Lord also warned Israel to not enter into marriages with any of these seven nations. Verse 3. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. No religion was to be done with them, not at all. They were not to adopt any of the religions. He has warned them just now. Don't marry with them because they will lead you to their gods. So Moses is specific here in verse 5. But thus you shall do to them. You shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars and hew down their asherim and burn their graven images with fire. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his own possessions out of all the people who are on the face of the earth. You might ask, what is an asherim? Well, an asherim was a carved wooden pole that symbolized a Cainite fertility goddess by the name of Asherah. And all the Canaanite descendants, the nations, worshipped this goddess. In fact, in the Ten Commandments, the Lord warned about worshiping other gods, warned about having graven images of other gods. This was another warning against breaking those commandments that Moses was reminding them. It's the reason why he was telling them. So why did the Lord give these warnings to the nation of Israel? It was because the Lord loved Israel. Verse 7. The Lord did not set his love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any of the people, for you were the fewest of the people. It tells us the Lord loved Israel, not because it was a great nation, but in reality, the Lord loved Israel because it was a small nation compared to any of the seven that he had listed here. But the Lord loved Israel because of another reason, because of his oath to Israel, as we find in verse 8. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore to your forefathers, the Lord brought you out by a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. The Lord had made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he would keep his promise as he always did. And as he always does, even with us. He had made an oath with them. And the Lord keeps his promises because of his faithfulness. Verse 9. Know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to a thousand generations with those who love him and keep his commandments. The Lord promised to be faithful to everyone who was faithful to him. To those who loved him, to those who kept his commandments. But while the Lord loved those who loved him, he also hated those who hated him, and he would destroy them because of their hatred for him with his wrath. Verse 10. But he repays those who hate him to their faces to destroy them. He will not delay with him who hates him. He will repay him face to face. Oh, how quickly the Canaanite descendants had forgotten the ability of the Lord to repay evil for evil. For you see, evil was being done and they were disobeying the Lord's instructions when the Tower of Babel was being erected. And knowing what all the Lord did to provide for Noah's family and his descendants by saving them through the flood, they came 98 years later to the Tower of Babel, and they moved there with the intent of building their tower to God. And the Lord confounded their language and gave each of the family units a new and different language. And so each family unit with their new and different language began to move out to obey the instruction of the Lord to populate the world. And the Canaanite family with its new language moved over to this land that we are calling their homeland, the Canaan land. They were living in Canaan land, there between the Great Sea and the Jordan River, or the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River. And they quickly forgot their God and all their God had done and all their God was able to do. They created their own gods and their own goddesses. They carved them with their hands. They covered them with silver. They covered them with gold. They put them all over on the high places where they could be worshipped. And to God, it was a terrible sin and evil. It was time for the Canaanites to be repaid by the Lord face to face. And remember, the Lord was fighting with Israel and would fight with Israel to bring them down. But the Lord's love for the individuals who made up the nation of Israel did have a condition. Verse 11. Therefore you shall keep the commandment and the statutes and the judgments which I am commanding you today to do them. It was Israel's duty that each individual, not just the nation, but each individual had to keep the commandments of the Lord in order to be kept by the Lord, as Moses was reminding them on that day. If the people kept the commands of the Lord would keep them. Verse 12. Then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you His covenant and His loving kindness, which He swore to your forefathers. It was the promise from the Lord. He would show His love for Israel. How? The Lord would show His love for Israel by multiplying the people. Verse 13a. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. What a blessing. The multiplication of many offspring would be a blessing. And not only would He multiply the people, but in order to provide for them, He would have to multiply their bounty from their agriculture and the bounty of the offspring of their herds and their cattle and their fields. They would have to be blessed too. Verse 13b. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd and your young flock, in the land which He swore to your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all people. There will be no male or female barren among you or among your cattle. The Lord will remove from you all sickness. What a blessing. No woman, married woman, will have a barren womb, a womb without children. No animals will have barren wombs, no barren grain, no barren ground, no barren herd, no barren flock. Best of all, no sickness. What could be better for a nation of people living on this earth than all these blessings? Well, for humans of any nation, it could get better. Oh yeah, it could. You know how it gets better? We see that it can get better because of the Lord's protection. Verse 15b. And He will not put on you any of the harmful diseases of Egypt, which you have known, but He will lay them on all who hate you. For 40 years, the Lord had protected the people of Israel from the diseases that they had known for 430 years back in Egypt, and they had seen it all, including all those plagues. But now, as Israel heads off to live in the promised land and to take it, the Lord promised to protect them from all those diseases that they had seen. And no doubt they had experienced them while being in Egypt. But now, living in the promised land, they would not experience them, but every nation around them would experience those diseases. That's the Lord's promise. For all of that, the Lord was willing to do. But I promise you, as we find here, it was based on the faithfulness of the people of the nation of Israel when they took the promised land and they continued to live in the promised land and continued to be faithful to the Lord in the promised land. Then the Lord's delivery was based on his instructions. You follow my laws. You follow my commandments. You follow my statutes. You follow my ordinance. These instructions that have been given. Verse 16. You shall consume all the people whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eyes shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. That command was harsh. The instruction that would give them no diseases that they had seen, no catastrophes, but they would have children upon children in the bounty of the ground and everything, was based on these seven nations being totally consumed with no pity for the people as they destroyed them. Why? Why is this the Lord's position? The reason was found in this verse when it said, "Nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you." He's still on the same topic. It was because of the great danger of being introduced to their gods, becoming accustomed to their gods, and becoming accustomed and celebrating the rituals of their gods that would ensnare the nation of Israel. But these seven nations were not weak, folks. They were much greater nations than Israel. Nevertheless, the Lord would deliver Israel. Verse 17. If you say in your heart, "These nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them?" You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hands and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. Egypt was a great nation, and the Lord delivered Israel from Egypt. The two Amorite nations were great nations, much greater than Israel. Nevertheless, the Lord delivered Israel from those two nations. The seven nations on the west side of the Jordan River were great nations, greater than Israel. Yet the Lord was promising to deliver Israel from them, just as he did from Egypt and the Amorites. The great and awesome God would do the work of cornering the people of those seven nations, even if he had to send hornets to drive them into hiding places so Israel could kill them. But the process of taking the promised land was not going to be quick. It would be little by little. Verse 22. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beast would grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will deliver their kings into your hand so that you will make their name perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand before you until you have destroyed them. What does Moses mean when he says, "You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beast would grow too numerous for you"? As the Hebrew and the Aramaic languages, which were so popular in that day, in Moses' day, began to lose its place in the Greek world, the century before the birth of Christ, Jewish scholars struggled with how to translate the scripture to non-Hebrew speaking people, non-Aramaic speaking people. Remember, they had learned Aramaic in Babylon. And we're talking about the century before the birth of Christ, way after the Deuteronomy is written. The answer of how to translate this passage and these words was left to the professional translators of the different languages. Those people would take the Hebrew and the Greek Bible, the Septuagint, that was already in place at the time, the 100 years before Jesus was born, and when they would read these scriptures to them in those new languages. They were Bible translators, in other words, Jewish Bible translators. The Jews called these translations that were made into these different languages targums. And in the Targum of Jonathan, he was one of the 80 sages who studied under a man by the name of Hillel the Elder. Now, Hillel the Elder was born in 110 BC, as far as we can determine. That was 106 years before the birth of Christ. And he died in 10 AD at the age of 120. That was when Jesus was 14 years old. So Hillel was one of the scholars of the scholars in the Jewish world during the time of Jesus' life on earth and the time of the Roman rule of Judea. And in his work on Deuteronomy, Jonathan said the following about these beasts that we just questioned, about these beasts who would overtake them, and this passage, in fact. When they shall come to devour their carcasses, the carcasses of the slain Canaanites, who, if destroyed at once, would be so many that they would lie unburied, which would invite the beast of the field to come out of their lurking places to feed upon them, and which might lead them on to mischief among the Israelites. That's what Jonathan said. In other words, if all of these seven Canaanite nations that were great and powerful and numerous, so numerous, and owned all this land, if they were killed all at once, all in one move, and the Israelites did not take the time to bury those dead as they should, then the beasts would come out from their places of lurking and would begin to eat those dead bodies, and may at the same time not only attack the people, but bring diseases with them that would also spread to the people. Now, we think of the word beast meaning big animals like bears and lions and tigers, and surely they would come. But also birds of prey, vultures and stuff, would come, sure enough. But also in the Bible we find that even small rodents like rats, nutria, and those type of things that would come to eat also. They're small and they carry diseases and they carry pests, which are deadly to humans. And if you don't get rid of the dead bodies, those little beasts will come. And not only that, the flies will come within just a few hours and lay their eggs and more flies on the dead bodies. You see, if Israel captured the promised land too fast, it could not handle the dead. They were not a great nation. But the Lord could help them with that too. And this passage says, "But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed." In other words, the Lord's going to bring them to these nations as He wills. He is going to control the progression of how fast they go and they take this land. And as these people come to them, He's going to throw the people in confusion. The Hebrew word for confusion is mehumah. and it means to panic. That is the best translation of that Hebrew word from that day in our language today. Now, I know we use the word confusion to mean the inability to process thoughts in our brain. That is not the meaning here. Our best word to translate this word is panic. It means that sudden, uncontrollable fear or anxiety that causes us to behave unthinking sometimes and wildly, to get caught up in things. That's the confusion. It's not where we can't put two or three words together in a sentence. It's that we are anxious and fearful. Well, the Lord would send that on the Canaanite nations, and Israel would be able to prevail because of that. And in that panic, the kings of the nations would be taken and would be brought before Israel, and they would be killed, and all their people would be killed. But we have to ask the question again, why? And the question we ask why always comes back to the same point with the Lord. The whole issue of why the Lord wanted every Canaanite king and his nation utterly destroyed was because of their religions. The only way to destroy the religions of a group of people is to destroy the people who worship in those religions. That's the only way. Verse 25. The graven images of their gods you are to burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, or you will be snared by it. For it is an abomination to the Lord your God. You shall not bring an abomination into your house, and like it comes under the ban. You shall utterly destroy it, and you shall utterly abhor it. For it is something banned. Notice that the Lord would not allow the Israelites to even reclaim the precious gold and silver that overlaid these golden images on their Canaanite gods that they had taken and were destroying. That gold and silver was banned from the Israelites by the Lord. So we see here in chapter 7, it's got a powerful instruction to totally destroy the people of these seven Canaanite nations for whom the Lord was about to take their land and give it to the nation of Israel. To do so, those seven nations were to be destroyed. But as we come to chapter 8, Moses steps into another place to summarize God's gracious dealings with Israel, both in the past and the promise of that gracious dealing in the future. The commands that Moses had just delivered to the nation of Israel from the Lord were for a reason. Chapter 8, verse 1. All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. Only by keeping the commands would the nation of Israel be granted the land that they are about to take to own. Only by keeping the commands would the nation of Israel be allowed to live on the land as their own. To prove that point, Moses asked them to remember the past 40 years. Where the Lord's past provisions of Israel provided for all their needs. Verse 2. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that He might humble you, testing you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep His commandments or not. He would humble you and let you be hungry, and feed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that He might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your feet swell for these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Disciplines means training. The Lord allowed the people to become hungry so He could feed them manna, a new food never before seen by their ancestors. It was like bread, but it was not bread. But for 40 years, they could only collect enough manna each day to provide for that day. And if any was left over, it spoiled. And with the manna, the people could rely and trust in the Lord each day, knowing that He would keep His promise. And they had to rely on the Lord's promise that He would feed them, because there was no other. The clothing that they wore for 40 years never wore out. The problems among the people with their feet for 40 years never occurred. It was the Lord's way of testing the people so they could see what was in their own hearts and trust in the heart of the Lord at the same time. If the people would continue to trust Him, they would see the Lord's future provisions as well. Verse 6. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth into valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron, and out of those hills you can dig copper. And when you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which He has given you. What a promise! What a promise! Everything Israel needed was in the promised land. Even copper ore was there that could be melted down into tools. The three original metal ages as we know them were first copper, then bronze, and then iron. Tools were originally made of copper because it was the easiest to process. Copper ore was crushed and it was heated in a fire. The impurities rose to the top and they'd scrape it away, and left was the molten copper, and they could take and pour it into sand molds to form pots and tools and other things. Bronze was harder to make. It required copper to be mixed with either some nickel or some zinc. And the metal was harder than copper, but it looked very similar. It could be polished like copper into a brilliant glow that could actually be used by as a mirror, and some people did with their brass and their copper, but bronze was harder than copper. The Iron Age was first discovered in China about 100 years before this story in Deuteronomy took place, before the Exodus. And iron is rarely found at the surface of the earth. I think you know that from your earth science in school. Iron must be dug up, because it is highly susceptible to rust because of the oxygen that's in the air that we breathe. But it was hard. So they knew about iron in these days. And Moses says that the land, the promised land, is going to be a land whose stones are iron. Well, we might think that that means that the stones were hard like iron. That is not the case. In fact, if you look up today, Israel has several deposits of iron ore that produces 15 million tons of iron ore each year. So I propose to you that when Moses says a land whose stones are iron, he means stones of iron, iron ore. But look at the rest of the list. Besides the metals, he talks about the water, the grain, the grapes, the figs, the pomegranates, the olive oil, the honey, and more. It's all going to be there without scarcity. What the Lord's promise is good for Israel. He had taken care of them in the past. And Moses is saying, in that new land, He's going to take care of you in the future. But once again, The Lord had a condition for his care and his provision. The nation had to remember the commandments. In addition, they could not be proud and forget. Verse 11. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and live in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your hearts will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Human nature never changes. It's the way God made us. When we are in a terrible place, instinctively we go to seek the Lord. Israel and the nation of Egypt was in a terrible place. And who do they seek? They sought the Lord. You know, the Gideon Bible Organization understands this. It is why they put a Bible in the drawer of every hotel and motel room in America, if those facilities will allow them to do it. More lonely, desperate, and needy people end up in these hotel rooms than you would imagine. I have buried more than 36 of those who were brought to an end with their lives in a ratty $20 motel room by alcohol, by drugs, by other things. Some I have cut down. Some I've had to help clean up the mess. But I want to tell you there's hope. For far more have come to me that went into such a ratty motel room and they found in the drawer a Bible hidden away in a drawer. A Bible unlike mine, which is marked up, a Bible with no markings in it. And they opened it, and something they read in God's Word changed their lives. And in their desperation, as they read, they cried out to the Lord, and He heard them. But sadly, then I've seen some of those folks who in the hotel rooms cried out to the Lord grow and watched as the Lord began to bless them, and they forgot the Lord. They went back to their drugs. They went back to their alcohol. They went back to their old ways. No wonder their families could not trust them. They were proud of what they had accomplished. They went back to thinking they had done all these things to pull them up by their bootstraps. But it was God who did it. Everything they had was from the Lord. I could see it, but they couldn't see it. They couldn't know it. Beware, Moses said, that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments. He promised to bless Israel, but Israel had to keep His commandments. Now, some 850 years after this story in Deuteronomy, we have a classic example of this problem with a man by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar exhibited this kind of pride. You see, the Lord chose Nebuchadnezzar, and He led Nebuchadnezzar in all of his campaigns, even though Nebuchadnezzar was a tyrant, even though Nebuchadnezzar was evil at the beginning. The Lord warned Nebuchadnezzar to not ever claim all of his successes as his own. The Lord sent Nebuchadnezzar, anointed Nebuchadnezzar, as an evil man that he was, to bring punishment on the southern kingdom. And he did. And in that, he brought out a man by the name of Daniel. And in that, within 2 years, Daniel was his second in command. Nebuchadnezzar was an evil man still at that time. And you put Daniel right underneath him and put Daniel in charge of the Babylonian Empire. All of it under Nebuchadnezzar while he was out fighting his battles. Friends, that was the worst thing Nebuchadnezzar could do if he wanted to continue to be a tyrant. Daniel was in charge of the people they were bringing out in exile. Daniel took care of them. Daniel ministered to Nebuchadnezzar. And after Nebuchadnezzar's campaigns were all over, 1 year after the Lord's warning to Nebuchadnezzar not to claim everything as his success, but to claim it as the success of God, Nebuchadnezzar walked out on his balcony and he looked out all over all the kingdom, and here's what he said in Daniel chapter 4, verse 30. Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? Well, in an instant, just like that, while the words were still in Nebuchadnezzar's mouth, a voice came from heaven saying, the voice of the Lord from heaven, saying, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared sovereignty has been removed from you, and you will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the animals of the field, and you will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whom He wishes. Nebuchadnezzar was not Jewish, but the Lord still had spoken to him and warned him, just as the Lord had warned Israel before they entered the Promised Land. And the Lord provided, and they were not to forget in their pride His provisions. And once again, Moses reminded them of all the Lord had done for them over the past 40 years in verse 15 in a different way. They were not to forget His care for them. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions, and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness, He fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and that He might test you to do good for you in the end. There it is at the end of the verse 16. Do you see it? It's the reason the Lord put the nation in the wilderness for 40 years. That He might humble you and that He might test you to do good for you in the end. The Lord forced the nation to rely on Him for 40 years for their every need for 40 years. They could not help themselves for 40 years. So He could provide for them, that He would keep His promise to them, and they would know He would keep His promise to them until the very end. Here the Lord promised that in the end, it would be good for the nation. But why did the Lord take 40 years to prove His point? The Lord wanted them to see an event and recognize and not forget His power. Verse 17. Otherwise, you might say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who is giving you power to make wealth, that He may confirm His covenant, which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. The Lord knew that Israel needed a major supernatural event in its history that the people could always look back to remember His power so they would never forget. The Exodus, coupled with the 40-year journey at Mount Sinai, was just that event in their history. But like the example that we mentioned above with Nebuchadnezzar, who faced the penalty, Israel dare not forget and perish by forgetting the Lord. Verse 19. It shall come about if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them. I testify against you today that you will surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, you shall perish because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. What a stern warning that is. If when Israel was settled in the land, if they forgot the Lord, they would perish like the Canaanites were going to perish at their own hands in the next few years. But why? Why? He said it, because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God and keep His commandments. Moses is not through with this part of his message. He must address the memory of when Israel actually provoked the Lord with her fear of the very people they are about to see again, the people great and tall. And he also has to remind them of their provoking the Lord with that golden calf. But that will have to wait until our next lesson. Lord, we never want to forget you. We want to put our trust in you, and we want to rely on you. And we thank you for being there. In your name, amen and amen.